In the mid-1990s, Congress eliminated federal funding for higher education programs in prisons. Today, only a handful of prisons still offer college courses to inmates. Four of those programs are run through an organization developed at Bard College, the small liberal arts school just 2 hours north of New York City. And joining me now are Max Kenner, the founder and executive director of the Bard Prison Initiative, and Justice Walston, a former inmate and a graduate of BPI. Welcome to our show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Max, what were the reasons given by Congress when it eliminated federal funding to college prison programs?
Well, if you remember, Leonard, in that period in the middle 1990s, there was a real frenzy in electoral politics, in particular about being tough on crime. Responses to problems of crime were overwhelmingly punitive. And at the same time, there were enormous cutbacks happening in public education in particular. So the argument made by elected officials was that why send people who are in prison to college for free when our tuition costs are going up?
Now, do critics still make that argument?
Much less. And one thing that's really important to point out is that even at the time, it wasn't a rational argument. Right, we knew that nothing went farther to reduce prison recidivism, that the college programs were extraordinarily cheap, that no form of correctional spending went so far or was as effective in doing all the things that we hope an institution might, like a prison, might do.
Well, with the economy in an even tougher state today than it was in the 1990s, do you have any hopes that we'll see a changed environment in Washington after January?
Well, certainly we're less optimistic at the state level than we are at the national level. But we also know that with the troubled economy, there's the potential for more people going to prison. And we also know that over time, if we send people to prison, we want to ensure that they're not coming back. We want to ensure that when they come back, they're productive members of a community, that they can find work. And that one of the most interesting things we found when the college programs across the country, we're a national program, was that irrespective of the employability of a person, whether or not a person coming home from prison could find a job, nothing made it certain that they wouldn't return to prison like a college education.
And Justice, is that what you saw when you were offered an opportunity to participate in BPI, that this was a way of avoiding falling into the same mistakes you had made before?
I think at the time that I actually joined the program, that wasn't quite my perspective. It is now that I have the opportunity to look back and see what the program has actually afforded me the opportunity to do. But at the time, I think that we were all trying to be involved in whatever was necessary to give ourselves a better opportunity to make that transition. Many of us had realized or come to the point that we realized that we needed to do something. We were still going to be faced with the same economic, social circumstances that we had been faced with before we came.
And returning to the same situation.
And we had to return to the situation. Some looked at it maybe as an opportunity to get a piece of paper that would make a difference. But I think what happened as a result of actually becoming a part of the program is that we began to be challenged by so many ideas and to broaden our worldviews and perspectives. And it had that residual effect of actually creating people, me and myself included, who had the capacity for problem solving. And it was just so many other different things that came into play.
Do you mind telling us why you were in prison?
In 1997, I was in a situation where an individual had assaulted my grandmother, and I just responded to the situation, confronted the person, and it didn't work. You know, it went downhill from that point, and I ended up being convicted of assault offense against.
And how long were you in prison?
I had 7 years. I was sentenced to 7 years.
What did you study when you were incarcerated?
The first thing that I studied was through the religious institution, and we did some stuff on character and all that type of thing. And then I went and I actually earned my certification for air conditioning and refrigeration. These were the only programs that were available, and, you know, we just kind of select from those things. And then prior to, like, Ball College coming in, there was really no college programs that I did, like, a theological seminary for a year. That was the first college level
program. So they taught you a trade, and I knew somebody who learned to be a draftsman in another prison program, and then he came out and he discovered that he didn't really have enough skill to make it as a draftsman,
yeah.
but it was something that had kept him busy while he was in prison.
Well, I think most of the people who are there want to take these trades, and they think that this I don't want to devalue that process, the idea that we got some shops around and we want to afford individuals the chance to go to those programs. But I think what happens is that, for one, is you can't transfer that experience. So if I went in and I worked in the electrical shop for 5 years, or I worked in the plumbing shop for 5 years, and I honed my skill that was comparable to, say, a journeyman out in society, once I made that transition, it was like, okay, well, I don't have a supervisor that I can call, have put on my reference sheet and call back up. So when I go to an employer, it's like, okay, well, what kind of real experience you have? I know I have 5 years of administrative assistance. I know I can do electrical work as good as anyone else, but I can't transfer that experience. And then you have other issues about, maybe the quality of the program in and of itself. But I think one of the things that is different when we start talking about college education is not so much that we're giving individuals vocational training, but there's other types of training that takes place. They're particularly expanding ideas and problem solving, stuff like that, which we cannot communicate through a simple vocational program.
And Max, you don't teach anything vocational. This is a liberal arts program that you offer as part of the Bard Prison Initiative.
That's exactly right. And I think Justice's point just now is well taken. We opened the conversation today talking about issues of public policy. But really, right, Bard College is an elite, private, liberal arts, institution. And we are not an institution that's in a place to solve the problems of crime or of justice in New York State or the United States. But what we do in the prisons and other places as well is provide a very real, rigorous college education, right? We believe in the utility of the liberal arts. We believe if someone goes on to be a plumber or a draftsman or whatever, he'll be more creative. He might be more successful having some sense of history, of politics, of philosophy, et cetera.
Well, how close is this to a real college education? Do people take 15 credits a term?
I could tell you, some people even take more. I've taken up to 18 credits there.
You had the time to do the
because
study?
Because I had the time to do it.
You had a lot more time to do studying other people.
And not only that, we knew we had to prove stuff to ourselves outside of proving it to anyone else. And so a lot of the individuals approached that whole experience so vigorously that we often went, we would assign 300 pages of reading. We would do the 300 pages of reading and then still read two other texts and did all these other references. And sometimes we would come into class and it was like, okay, I know something about that subject. And the professor say, okay, we're going to get to that later. We'll be sitting in the class waiting for that later to come, not knowing that the professor meant that we had covered stuff that was going to be in the fourth week of classes or the eighth week in classes. So we really approached it very intensely, and we were able to do that. And the reason why I think that was significant is because I made a transition. I'm currently getting ready to complete my bachelor's degree, and I've never seen the level of commitment or performance at even on the college level. And I'm not devaluing any of my classmates, my peers. Some of them are very brilliant, but I've never seen such a large portion of the college body commit themselves as much as I've seen it in Ball College.
Well, what was your attitude toward education before you went into prison? Because a lot of people who get caught up in, well, you weren't a typical criminal, but a lot of people who get involved in criminal activity. Well, you had a situation, as you said.
Right, right.
But a lot of people, they wind up not really wanting to go to school, and then they find themselves trapped in they can barely read.
Well, let me say this, because I have a wide experience with many things, and I think that the average person, even before they find themselves faced with criminal justice system, want good things. But I think that the person, and I'm speaking for myself actually, may not have the means to adequately face whatever problems they were dealing with prior to going to prison. So things move fast. I think when I made my transition now, things were moving so fast that you really don't have a chance to think. You need to move and operate off of instinct.
But what level of education did you have when you entered prison?
When I made my transition, I didn't have a college education. I think I had a – actually, when I first got in trouble with the situation. I didn't even have a GED. And I was actually sitting in one of the county institutions, and I was bored. There was nothing to do in there. And somebody came back with a book with some math problems, and it was like, oh, where did you get that from? And he said, I got it from down here at the school. So I signed up, and I went down, and I probably ran through all the books they had in like a week. And I was like, what's left? And I ended up taking the GED. But to answer your original question, I think that when we finally got in that situation myself, and we had a chance to slow down and wasn't worried about food, clothing, and shelter and some of the other different things, it kind of made us available to thinking about education. And
Max, whatever. I know you want to talk. I'm going to have to take a little break. We come back. I come back to you so you can add to that. My guests are Max Kenner, who's the founder and executive director of the Bard Prison Initiative, Justice Walson, former inmate and a graduate of BPI, now completing his college education. Stay with us for more. And we're back with Max Kenner, the founder and executive director of the Bard Prison Initiative, and Justice Walston, former prison inmate who is a graduate of BPI. Max, I'm sorry I didn't give you a chance to add to what Justice was saying before.
Sure, and just a quick correction about one thing that you said as we were making the segue. At the college, we like to think of people like Justice not so much as alumnus or alumni of BPI, but of Bard College, right? The basic principle of the program and the arrangement that we have with Bard College itself is that the college waives tuition for all of its incarcerated students based on one simple principle, that we can guarantee the college that every credit and certainly every degree, which Justice has, is of the same quality, same standard, same rigor of what happens on campus, right? There is no pandering. We are not a charitable organization, right? This is a college, all right? But also to address the question you asked, Justice, a minute ago, which is about the educational level of many of our students when they first came to prison. And I have to tell you, maybe the single most encouraging thing we've seen over this roughly 10 years of being in the prisons in a very intensive way is that so many of the students we have who are most intellectually ambitious, most curious, students who want to, you know, learn to read German philosophy in its original language, who are studying advanced biology or complex systems in mathematics or what have you, so often those students are the same ones who dropped out of conventional schools the youngest, right? Mm. Very bright young people who were enrolled in schools, primary schools, that were obviously failing. And they recognized at a young age there was nothing for them there.
A listener wants to know if you do this in women's prisons as well.
Absolutely, and we should say that we do that. We have a campus at the Bayview Correctional Facility for Women right here in Manhattan. And I hope some of them are listening, and we'll be having our first graduation there this coming spring.
Now, you said that this is as rigorous as anything that that the students would get if they were going to Bard itself.
Sure.
Who's teaching? Are the regular professors teaching?
Overwhelmingly, it's junior and senior faculty from Bard College.
And they're happy to go in and devote all this extra time to working in prison?
You know, Justice is laughing. When we started the program, right, years ago, the president and the deans of the college all said the single hardest thing in getting this program to work wouldn't be dealing with the prisons or raising the money, which is a, you know, not simple thing, but convincing the college faculty to take on extra coursework. And it wasn't simple. It is extra coursework for them, and they're already very hardworking people. But the thing is that all of those professors see, Justice already alluded to, is how much is at stake for our incarcerated students, how excited, how enthusiastic, how extroverted they are. No one has ever taught for us. No one has ever come for a visit and not wanted to come back. So if you convince people to come once, you have them.
Because they really see, it, unlike some of the students they have at a regular college who are looking out the window and bored, these are really committed students.
Well, because to a person, they say, this is the most fulfilling teaching experience I've ever had.
Well, I think like with Professor Berto, who has spent an enormous amount of his time getting his doctorate.
He's the chair of philosophy at Bard College.
To have some students actually come and want to do extra work in that philosophy was like a big payback for me, you know, because most of the people who are in the conventional class are like, oh, can we shorten this thing and make the 20 pages 10 pages? And he was really excited about the fact that he had a body of students that really wanted to go deeper into that stuff.
Well, how do you pay for this?
Again, you know, there's virtually no public money. And one thing that's embarrassing about being a professional fundraiser for a program like this is just how inexpensive it is. Right, when you think about what we pay to keep someone in prison for a year, which is somewhere between $40,000 and $50,000, and most of those people return to prison, to virtually guarantee they won't come back to prison, and to get them a very serious education costs us, depending on the level of the student, between $2,000 and $5,000 a year. Very cheap, or inexpensive, I should say. It's all private money, and you know, we're always trying to come up with it.
Aren't there some handicaps that other students don't face? For example, you can't go on the internet, can you?
Well, that's the thing.
That means you can't cheat by Googling something and then just copying it.
No, you can't. You can't cheat on that level. But the guys are very resourceful. Even outside of the college program, whenever we really, really wanted a piece of information, we can get it. And this is where the families come into play at, right? Many individuals are being supported probably by a woman. Whether that's a wife or a sister or a mother or so forth like that. And when you have a guy calling home and saying, listen, I'm involved with an actual college program and I want to do this thing, and the person shows commitment through semester after semester, what I started to see happening was that you might not have been able to get the money for the sneakers that you wanted, but that person would have no problem with sending you a book or copying some information, and it becomes infectious, because then now I've seen plenty of situations where individuals' daughters or their mothers or their sisters decided they were going to go back to school. And so we had that situation happening, and we shared a lot of information amongst each other.
And I'm sure it also gives them hope for a better situation once you get out of prison.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And speaking on behalf of the college, we do have to add that, you know, the academy in Western civilization did exist for many hundreds of years without the internet.
Now, what would you have done with your time if you hadn't had a program like this?
I think after a certain period of time, when you're in any institution, you kind of like go through all the programs, and then there's like a dead period. And if you really have nothing challenging at that point, you can actually start to break down whatever practices you had. So I really would hate to think about what I would have had to have filled my time with, because it's idle time. Many people work out, they do some other stuff like that.
And some people would like to stop them from working out as well. Why should we send them to prison and pay for a weightlifting program? But once you got out, did this help? Because one of the big problems with people who've been released from prison is they have to explain what they've been doing for the past few years, and then they have to apologize for not having much of an education.
There were a lot of roadblocks with just, again, like you said, just making a transition. And I'm not so much sure that the specific degree that I earned was a major catalyst, because it was a liberal arts degree and, you know, that type of thing. But which doesn't take away from the value of the liberal arts degree at all. But
you mean you can't apply all that German philosophy to
everything? Yeah, I'm going to a place and I want to do some welding. It's like, okay, you got to – that type of thing. But what happened was, I think that the experience itself, you know, kind of like having worked through some problems helped me a lot. And also having that associate's degree, it was a little easier for me to move on to the next degree, which was a bachelor's level, which is what I'm completing now. And so that became a very important accomplishment, experience-wise, as well as having a piece of paper. And then I think also, because I had a degree, it told the people who I spoke to that I was a serious candidate for whatever it was that I was trying to get into. And even though I may not have been qualified for something that I was going for, it said, okay, well, you're a person that I want to talk to. And I found that I went to a lot of places looking for, you know, maybe some assistance and job placement and stuff like that, and they actually told me, we really don't know what to do with you, because you have more...
You're too educated.
Yeah, you have more education than the people we're accustomed to dealing with, and then you have less education. So we don't know how to market you, is what I found. And it was a very difficult situation to be in, to say that, you know, I want to do something, but the people who were supposed to help me weren't able to help me.
Max, are you more likely to accept an inmate in the program if he or she will be released from prison in the foreseeable future?
The admission process of what we do, aside from fundraising, is the most difficult and the worst part of the work.
Because lifers out there who might want to know all of this stuff, but they're not going to be able to apply it, are they?
I wouldn't presume that someone who's sentenced to spend the rest of their life in prison can apply a liberal arts education to their own experience. But every time when we do admission, we have 100, 150, often 200 applications for 15 spots. The competition is intense. And during that process, we don't take into account the nature of someone's conviction, the nature of someone's sentence, or largely their disciplinary record, right? We are looking, again, for curious and motivated and capable students.
What would happen if Congress did restore federal funding to programs such as yours? How would you expand BPI?
Well, the first thing you would see wouldn't directly have to do with BPI, which is you would see virtually every community college across the country reengage with the criminal justice system. The primary beneficiaries of that, besides the students, would be the community college system. But for BPI, we're at a level now where close to where we need to be. We are about 200 students now. We'll be at around 250, where I think we'll top out in five prisons across the state. The most important thing we want to do is open up an office here in New York City where we can provide more services, educational and otherwise, to our students as they come home.
And Justice, you said you're going for a college degree. What school are you going to?
I'm currently in DeVry University, working on my network and communications major, and I'll do some subcontracting work in it.
Well, of course, you couldn't have gotten into that school if you hadn't gone through this program.
Oh, no, I certainly wouldn't have been able to do what I'm doing now without that degree, which I think, again, like I said, it was probably the best platform I could ever have given myself.
And I want to thank you so much for being with us. I've been talking with Justice Walston, who is a former prison inmate, a graduate of the Barred Prison Initiative, and with Max Kenner, the founder and executive director of the Barred Prison Initiative. It's been a real pleasure having the two of you on this show. And
Leonard, thank you.
Thank you.
I hope you keep going.
Absolutely.
Thank you.